Well, good afternoon and welcome to the latest edition of the Star Blades. Hopefully the misery of that playoff exit is beginning to subside, but it might take a few days just yet. I'm Steve and I'm joined by our Blades correspondent, James Shield, to just reflect on Tuesday and the season as a whole. James, so much to unpack about Tuesday. Had a bit of everything, I think, the night, but have you managed to get your head around it all yet?
Yes, I have. Yeah, unfortunately. It's not the subject we'd have been hoping to get our heads around, is it? But no, I think, I mean, I'm sure we'll go into some of the different facets of the game in a little bit more detail shortly. But what I will say is, there's never an easy way to lose a tie or a game like the one Sheffield United were involved in on Tuesday at Nottingham Forest. But if there is a way that you're going to lose it, then I think that was the way. And that was by showing courage, by going out on their shield, by doing almost everything. You can't say everything that was required, because unfortunately Sheffield United didn't win the game. But by doing almost everything that they had to do to achieve what would have been the type of result, trailing 2-1 from the first leg, of course, that would have had people talking for probably the next 5, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, it almost was a classic. If they'd have found that winner, I think we'd have been talking about the spirit of 22 in 10 years' time, 20 years maybe as well, just like they talk about the 2003 game.
Yeah, it would have probably got Paul Pescicalido out of having to field phone calls from the likes of myself every time Sheffield United face Nottingham Forest in one of these games as well.
Definitely. I was wondering, obviously I was there with you on Tuesday, the more I reflected on it, the more I wonder, it was a bit lacklustre in that first half from Sheffield United. I can't get my head around whether Paul Heckenbottom slammed that ball into Jed Spence deliberately to try and provoke a reaction from his own players. And obviously I'm getting into conspiracy theories here, really, because we've got no indication of that was the case, but
the old John McEnroe tantrum theory.
Do you think is there some credibility in this one?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because ordinarily I would have thought you were talking absolute nonsense, Steve. But I suspect you're not. I think there was two parts to that, and the reason why I say it is because inevitably, and it wasn't the main talking point after the game, unfortunately, which wasn't the result either. But as you would expect, we did ask Paul Heckenbottom about that incident with Jed Spence when the time was right, when the opportunity arose during what was a pretty chaotic post-match interview. With everything that was going on inside the City Ground at the time, and of course the assault on Billy Sharp. And Paul Heckenbottom's response to that was quite interesting. First off, he did say that he felt Jed Spence was indulging in a little bit of gamesmanship. And I think giving you a little insight into some of the relationships that have built up amongst this squad over the past few months, he did say, well, I know players indulge in that. I know they like to sort of pull out a few tricks, if you like, to waste a bit of time or break the game up, or just, I think probably in Jed Spence's case, get under the opposition's skin. Sheffield United will do that as well. But as Paul Heckenbottom said quite explicitly, not against my team. I'm not having it. So I think there were two parts to that reaction. One was, dare I say it, a little bit of frustration with Spence himself and how the game was unfolding, as you said, because Sheffield United weren't brilliant during the first half, but they did enough to stay in the game. But also Paul Heckenbottom did say, well, you know, and we needed a reaction as well. So I think perhaps that was a little bit of a slip from the Sheffield United manager that revealed that perhaps his reaction to that incident was a little bit choreographed as well. I'm sure there's no hard feelings. And in the grand scheme of things, when you look at some of the other confrontations that took place it almost doesn't even warrant talking about, does it? Does it, Steve? But I totally understand why you've asked, because it was an interesting sort of little subplot to the game.
Yeah, at the time I just thought, because it's quite strange, Hegemann's not the sort of manager who you see getting too ruffled
and no.
on a touchline. So it was out of character, I think it's fair to say.
But I think as well, even someone who is usually quite reserved, who is usually quite sort of circumspect and does like to sort of consider his answers to any sort of question that he's given as well. He's human as well. He's obviously a fierce competitor. He wouldn't have become a professional footballer in the first place if he wasn't. That's one trait that everybody involved in professional sport has got. And it was also a hugely emotional moment. And I think every player on that pitch will have got swept along by the tide of emotion that was sort of sweeping through the City ground on the night. Unfortunately, some people got a little bit too swept along by that and sort of probably drowned in their own stupidity. But again, we'll probably get onto that in a moment.
Yeah, I mean, it feels strange that ordinarily that would have been a huge talking point, Heckenbottom and what happened there. But it was very, very quickly forgotten about. Obviously, we can reflect on it a bit more broadly, I'm sure, in the next few minutes. But how do you think this season will be remembered?
Well, ultimately, it's ended in disappointment. There's no point in pretending otherwise. There's no point in dressing things up. Sheffield United haven't achieved or didn't achieve what they initially set out to do, and that was regain their Premier League status at the first attempt. So, yes, it's disappointing. Yes, it's not worked out as anyone would like, but I think almost when you take the season as a whole, as I said about the game itself, if you're going to lose a game, if you're going to, I don't like to use the word fail because it sounds a little bit too strong, really. And, you know, there's an awful lot of other teams in the division who have had a say in how the season's unfolded as well. It's not Sheffield United's God-given right to go up. It's not Fulham's God-given right to go up, or Bournemouth, or be it Forest or Huddersfield Town, when they'll play, meet each other in the playoff final. But I think the key thing for me is that once that disappointment subsides, it's a very different season to last season. And that is, when last season finished, or the season before last, I'm never quite sure at this point when there's still a playoff final to play, how I should refer to.
Yeah.
Do I refer to it in the present or the past tense? I don't know. Perhaps somebody out there can, or you can help me with that. But there was nothing you could take from the season. The only thing you could take from Sheffield United's last season in the Premier League, the only positive thing you could take from it was that it was over, because it had been such a debilitating, such a dispiriting experience that you just wanted to draw a line under it and move on. I think this season feels very different. So although Sheffield United haven't gone up, I think they have given themselves things to build on. I think the team, after a really difficult period, that I don't entirely blame Paul Heckenbottom's predecessor, Slavisa Jokanović, for. And I think perhaps sometimes, you know, when you weigh up and consider his reign, I think sometimes we sort of forget the circumstances that he took the job in, and the circumstances that he found himself in as well, after what was a chaotic pre-season programme. But Sheffield United they've rediscovered themselves almost. The bond between the team and the crowd has been repaired. They've obviously finished the season on the back of some really good results, because otherwise they wouldn't have qualified for the playoffs in the first place. They were 16th, of course, when Heckenbottom took charge. But I think we've discovered some really good players. Unfortunately, some of those will go. Morgan Gibbs-White, of course, on loan. He won't be coming back. But you've seen people like Illiman and Dyer come to the fore. I think he's going to be a really a hugely important player, particularly with Gibbs-White leaving. for Sheffield United next season. There's people like Will Asola. We already knew about Daniel Jebison, but I think someone like, you know, Will Asola has shown that he can play a part next season. I don't think Paul Heckingbottom, with the greatest of respect to Will, will want him to be playing too prominent a role. But I think, you know, he's shown that he's a player who can perform and make things happen at this level. I think Sheffield United can go into next season knowing that they've got a distinct identity, a distinct way of playing. And I think they can also go into next season looking back on a campaign and looking back on that last performance of the campaign with a huge amount of pride. I know it won't feel like that for the players because, as I said, they're all sort of uber competitive beings. But, you know, they can still be proud of what they've done.
Yeah, I feel like the overwhelming emotion still, it may be because of what happened at full-time whistle, it is pride, isn't it? It's not like we're not seeing Sheffield United fans criticising the team, the players. I think they're all proud of the way they came out firing in that second half. And
yeah, and absolutely. And the reason why Sheffield United fans won't criticise the players is because football fans get a really sort of bad rap at times. I often hear people in my own profession talking about them as, oh, they're really fickle, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Well, you know what? We can all be a little bit fickle at times, can't we, in our professional and in our sort of personal lives. But by and large, football fans are not difficult to please. And by that, I mean, most fans, and I speak as a football fan myself, what you want to see is a player on the pitch almost behaving in terms of the commitment and the determination that they're putting into a performance as you would do if you were pulling on that shirt. Now, they're obviously far better players than I don't know.
Definitely.
How you were, Steve, but they're obviously far good. I'm guessing the fact that we're both on this podcast, I can say they're obviously far better players than you and I ever were. But they've also got to show that courage, that desire, that commitment, and that connection as well with a support base. They've got to make you feel as if, you know, it's a team of supporters out there on the pitch. And that's something that Sheffield United did. Sheffield United fans aren't hard to please. And I was speaking to a player today, and it'll appear in the paper next week, but he mentioned about this subject as well. And he said, you know, one of the things that he said I very quickly learned was, and he's a goal scorer, he's an attacker, but he said a racing back and putting in a tackle, putting in a block on a midfielder after you've lost the ball can get as big a cheer at Bramall Lane as a wonder goal. And that sums it up. I think Sheffield United fans are proud of their players. And I will say this as well. The way Sheffield United supporters conducted themselves, unless I've missed something, which I don't think I have, the way they conducted themselves on Tuesday night after the game, unfortunately, they weren't given an opportunity to sort of pay homage to the players because of the pitch invasion. But I think Sheffield United players, and obviously I do speak to them through the course of my work, they're really proud of the fans as well. Really, really proud of the fans. And that's when Sheffield United, without getting too cliched about it, is at its best. That's when that football club is at its strongest, when the players and the team are working in tandem together. And I think they're both really proud of each other.
Yeah, definitely. Nice note there. Big summer ahead, do you think?
Yeah, huge summer. Absolutely huge summer ahead. There's obviously going to be some big challenges replacing Morgan Gibbs-White, as I said. And I think Sheffield United will have to find a way of replacing him, because having had so much success playing a certain way, reverting not entirely but slightly back to the way that Chris Wilder played when he was in charge, I don't see Paul Heckingbottom, if he can help it, wanting to divert too far from that strategy, too far from that sort of tactical plan that he's rolled out since taking the job. So in order to do that, they're going to have to find another Morgan Gibbs-White. Now, that's not going to be an easy task by any stretch of the imagination. And they may well not even find a player as good as Morgan Gibbs-White. But I think as long as they can get someone in who can perform that role, I think that's going to be vital. I think keeping hold of certain players is going to be vital. There's some that we're going to move on. We already know about those, David McGoldrick, Luke Freeman. There'll be some will be prized away as well. Some will be lured away by Premier League clubs. You know, maybe one or two. That tends to happen in situations like this. But I think Sheffield United have got to make sure that if players go, because we've seen Bournemouth did this last season. Norwich have done this in the past and bounced back, and Bournemouth have obviously been automatically promoted. The big challenge for Sheffield United is making sure that if somebody goes, it's a player that they're not happy to see go, but that they know they can replace. So rather than just having players picked off, there's almost got to be a strategy to the departures as well as the incoming signings. And it's not impossible to do because, as I've said, other teams have shown that you know, you can do that. That's something I think Sheffield United have got to do this summer. And then as well, they've got to continue developing people like Illiman and Dyer. He's a player that I love watching. He's a player that you want to see do well as well because he's a really nice lad off the pitch. He could potentially step into Morgan Gibbs-White's shoes. They're going to be big shoes to fill. But Illiman and Dyer has undoubtedly got the talent to be able to do that if he continues progressing. But then to play the way that they do, I think Paul Heckingbottom will be very, very keen to see Sander Berge stay. I don't think that's a given, but I think he'll be keen to see him play. And he'll be keen to bring someone in who can perform that Gibbs-White role again alongside Illiman. I think there's other key positions that they possibly need to fill. For me, I think they need an athletic box-to-box midfielder. I know some fans won't like to hear me say this, but someone who before, I think it's fair to say, probably let himself down a little bit towards the end, but someone in that John Lundstrom mould who can cover the ground pretty quickly and has got a physical presence and can score a goal as well. I think we've seen in certain games, not every game, but in certain games, that might even help bring the best out of Oliver Norwood and John Fleck even by providing them with a little bit of cover when they're getting pressed. And I think Paul Heckingbottom as well will want to inject some extra pace in the squad. You've obviously got some important players coming back. It's important not to forget about those. Rhian Brewster, he's been out injured a long time. Jaden Bogle, who personally I think was a far, far bigger loss than even I realised, because of that attacking thrust that he provides from the wing-back position and the goals that he can score as well. So they're coming back into the side. But I think as well you've seen... I tell you what, let me put it like this. Going back to that game against Nottingham Forest, there was a moment after Sheffield United, John Fleck had scored their second goal, when Nottingham Forest were on the rack. I thought they looked as if they'd gone. I think their heads were spinning. I don't think that they'd lost all control of the game. And for me, before I get onto the main point, I think it was a real, real shame that Billy Sharp wasn't out there on the pitch, because there was a couple of incidents in the game that probably been forgotten about now. But I can remember making a note of them at the time. Balls going into the box, one in particular. I think Billy Sharp would have been on the end of those, and you would have backed him to score. And I think if Sheffield United had scored then, I don't think Nottingham Forest would have come back at all. But Bryce Samba, quite rightly, the Nottingham Forest goalkeeper, has got an awful lot of praise after that second leg. And he deserves that praise for his performances, not only during the game, but also during the penalty shootout. But for me, the turning point of that game wasn't Bryce Samba. The key figure in that game, the guy who saved Nottingham Forest from folding, I thought was Keenan Davis, who, when he came on, his pace and his power gave them an outlet. It just changed the dynamic of what they were doing. And I think I'm not saying Sheffield United are looking to replicate Nottingham Forest, because they won't be, and nor should they be. But someone in that mould as well, I think, would be a really good solid acquisition for Sheffield United. Not him, but a player in that mould.
Yeah, no, agreed. The ball just stuck to him for long periods in that period of extra time. But you mentioned some names there: Brewster, obviously. There's McBurney still to come back to. Bogle. These are all young players who've got improvement in them. Obviously, Heckey said he wants six or seven, but there's just based on that what you've just said there. There's reasons for optimism, isn't there? I feel like we're not going into this close season thinking that's the chance gone now. You know, it'll be another 11 years until they're in the top flight again. It's it feels like, you know, there's enough there to potentially have a go next season.
Absolutely. And Sheffield United shouldn't be feeling like that. So long as they behave properly, if you like, during the summer, and they follow a strategy and they stick to it. We all know the challenges that Sheffield United have got, but it's not impossible to do. It's not impossible to do. In fact, it's not that difficult to do. So long as you get a plan and you stick to it, and there's good communication behind the scenes.
Brilliant. That's that for this week. Thanks very much for listening today and throughout the season as a whole. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, there might even be some retainless news, a bit more transfers in and outs. We'll see. Cheers.